Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, and a warm welcome back to the Ross Lair podcast. Today, Michael Freeman and I are in casual conversation with Noel Cullerton about his new book, Classical Women.
Noel, you've now written 3 books. We're going to talk about the third book, which is Classical Women.
I was interested in music most of my life. In fact, it started in St. Peter's College back in 1965, for God's sake. That time, when you were a youngster, we used to do operas and Gilbert O'Sullivan operas. So the couple of operas I was in was in HMS Pinafore and The Mikado. And that interest, that sparked an interest in me. Now, we used to watch Top of the Pops in there as well. So I loved all music, be it the Clancy Brothers or Tom and Tommy Makem or Gilbert and Sullivan. I just liked them all. But the Rolling Stones versus the Beatles was the big arguments we used to have at the time. But I then went to university, and there was I had some friends that used to go to concerts. And being a student, we had very little money. But that time, RTE used to, they didn't have their own studios for concerts. And they had a hall, the Francis Avery Hall in the north side of Dublin. And every Friday evening, they used to put on concerts. And they liked the hall to be full. It was seemingly better for the sound, for the radio. So every Friday night, my friends and I hauled ourselves off to the Francis Avery Hall for the concert. And we had a fantastic time. Charles Acton, I remember, was the Irish Times correspondent. And it was all very informal. And I remember there used to be a pub across the road, and lots of the orchestra would go in for a jar afterwards, and we'd go across as well. So we hobnobbed with the orchestra and talked about this and that, and it gave me a love for the music that I never lost. So I came back to Wexford, went to Wexford Opera, just bought CDs, did what everybody else did. And then when I retired, all my life I wrote. As a scientist, you have to publish. That's the nature of the beast. You have to publish books and papers. So I found myself, what will I do now that I'm retiring? And I found that the two things I loved was writing and music. So I simply said, why not combine them? And it happened more or less by accident. I was interested in literature because I read. If I have nothing to read, I'll read what's in the cornflakes box. I'll just read everything. So I met a publisher, and I gave him a book with 900 pages, for God's sake. And the publisher looked at me and said, I'll have a look at it. He came back to me 3 weeks later and said, if you reduce that by 90%, I'll consider publishing it. And I suspect he thought that was the end of that, one less to worry about. So, but I went away and did exactly that. I came back with 10% of what I had written, and that publisher published it.
And what was the name of that book?
They Wrote Great Music. That was published in 2018. And that book was quite successful. How many copies we made of it, but we sold them all, believe it not. And that encouraged me to write a second book called Classical Connections. And again, same story. It's a book about composers. I'm a fascination with composers, nearly as much about the composers as with the music. I am constantly fascinated with composers, why they wrote or what inspired them to write. And that led to the first book was about literature, how literature, Shakespeare and Pushkin and the writers affected composers. And that the book explores that kind of thing. The second book was similar. I think in everyone's life, you meet someone at some stage, be it a teacher or a partner or a brother or a sister or a father, whatever, or friend, who says something to you and it changes the direction of your life. You start thinking about things differently. So that led me to write the second book. Like Verdi met an influential writer and forced him and changed his mind about writing in old age and that kind of thing. After the second book was published, I was sitting around and I had a few friends in, and they said, in all your books, you've never once mentioned a woman, and yet 51% of the population is female. What on earth? Why haven't you written something about females? So I looked through my CD collection And sure enough, I had very little about from female composers, except something about Clara Schumann, who's a real favourite of mine. So I began to investigate it and to discover that there was a whole world of music written by female composers. But more important, but I also discovered that female composers had a really, really difficult life. And both at that time, you see, right from the start of time, women's primary focus in life was to get married, have children, mind a house. They had very few career opportunities, which meant a lot of them not only had no opportunities, but they also lived in very poor circumstances. So they never really got a chance to write. And even worse than that, later on, when women did start to write, men were of the view not only should they not write because it's not their job, but they reckoned they didn't have the intellectual capacity to write, which is incredible. But that's what men genuinely thought. And women found the same thing. Even women began to think, oh, well, I'm not capable of writing this. And they didn't write either. So there was some, right throughout the ages, there was a small cadre of women who wrote. And I think there were tremendous women. There were just tremendous people that overcame those obstacles. And we went from a time where there was no music being written by women to now where, to my mind, there's no difference between whether you're a male or a female now. There was one famous composer, Joan Tower, who's still alive, an elderly woman now. And she said, there should be no such thing as a male or a female composer. There's just a composer who happens to be a woman or a man. And I think that's pretty well as it is now. There are those that argue there's still some prejudice, but not a lot. Well, I don't think there's a lot. Maybe I'm sure I'd be contradicted on that. But nonetheless, we've come a long journey. In my book, Classical Women, I describe the lives of 26 women that wrote music and wrote really excellent music in spite of all those odds.
One of those is the world famous Hildegard von Bingen.
Yes.
So she existed in the 10th century.
Hildegard von Bingen is a hero of mine. Hildegard was born in Germany, around the Rhine, in 1098. She entered a convent, a Benedictine convent, when she was about 8 years of age, although the exact date is in dispute. And she was very lucky. The convent she entered had a lot of very bright people, and she had a great teacher, and she learned a lot. Now, there are those that argue why she entered a convent. Some say it was because already at a young age she was having visions. Other people would say it was the custom at the time that lots of large families sent their youngest into a convent. Either way, she entered a convent and did very well there. She was obviously a very clever woman. But she, what that time, the convent was part of a monastery, which was mainly peopled by monks. So the females were in one corner and the monks had the rest of it. She decided to set up her own convent. So she had to ask permission from her boss and from her bishop. And it was unheard of. She was refused point blank. But these people had no idea who they were dealing with. Hildegard was an incredibly efficient and able woman. She was a force of nature. And she eventually wore everybody down. And eventually the local bishop said, oh, go on, go build your convent. And she did. She designed it. She planned the whole thing out. And she supervised the building of it. And herself and 22 others moved into this all-female convent. Now, there are those who would argue that she was difficult. She was probably certainly a snob in that the people she brought with her were all from the same socio-economic level. They were all minor aristocratic families, and she maintained she didn't want any social discord or social disagreements if she brought in people from different classes. Rightly or wrongly, that's what the woman did. The other thing, at the time, nuns, even still, we regard as sort of poverty, that dress, they take away the personality and they espouse poverty and they don't wear anything flashy or anything like that. She was quite an extraordinary woman. They wore no veils. They were allowed to do what they like with their hair. They were allowed to wear jewellery. They were allowed pretty much free rein. And she ran her convent that way and ran it very successfully. She also was an incredibly talented woman. Now, she was not only was she only turned to composing when she was 40. She also was a doctor, not a doctor, but she practiced medicine. She knew all about plants. She believed in holistic treatments. She combined science, medicine, biology, and religion all into one kind of a philosophy, a holistic approach to life, which I'm told there are people still sort of read the kind of things that she wrote about. She also wrote a huge amount. She only took to composing music late in life. And when she died, she lived a long life, constantly in trouble with the her bosses. But she had even popes came to listen to her. She was a diplomat. She was able to get her way at a time when women were not only not seen, but they weren't, they certainly weren't heard, were hardly even seen. But she got to be in a stage where she could advise popes and advise bishops and all that kind of thing. Even towards the end of her life now, she fell out with the church yet again. There was a person died and she buried him within the confines of the convent. And the locals at the time said, that's not right. He was a sinner. He should not be buried within the convent. She argued that he had repented before he died. And the row got so bad that her convent was prevented from singing. But again, they had no hope. Hildegard wrote letters to all and sundry, and she eventually got away. And she lived to be the ripe old age. She was well in her 80s before she died. She wrote mainly ecclesiastical music. But she was her music was forgotten then. You remember, this was 1098, when she was born. For most of the hundreds and hundreds of years, her music was forgotten. It was only in the 1990s, some producer in England, I think, discovered her music, released a CD, and it was outstandingly successful. I think it not only the classical music records, but sector, it also got into the public, into the popular sector, and has done very well. That all resulted in 2012, the Pope Benedict actually made her a saint of the church. So now she is very frequently played and is very popular, and long may it be so. She wrote a lovely, clear, and whether you're a believer or an unbeliever, her music is very moving.
It's the most famous piece, Voices of Angels.
Voices of Angels, yeah. She wrote three or four big pieces of work, and part of it is called Voices of Angels. There's a little piece in it called Ave Generosa. If we had time, maybe we'd play it at some stage in the programme. It's absolutely very striking, very pure and very clear and very moving.
That stunningly beautiful piece was the Aarhus Girls Choir singing Ave Generosa.
The book is Classical Women. Its subtitle is They Broke Barriers in the World of Music. It's by Noel Cullerton, with beautiful illustrations by David Mahan, and it's available through bookshops everywhere in Ireland and the world. And it would make a beautiful Christmas present.
Michael and I shall return next week to continue our conversation about Noel Cullerton's book, Classical Women. Keep on listening to TRP.